Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat if you want to talk that way. Through the next 1 hour, talking Giants and NFL football. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Sean O'Connell. Covers the Utah Utes out there in the great state of Utah. Does afternoon drive out there. So we'll have a chance to talk to him about some of the guys coming out of Utah as we continue our offensive line trek around college football for the last couple of days. Paulie Dotts, Garrett Bowles, of course, the big offensive tackle coming out of there.
Yeah, and you know, John, we were fortunate to be at the Combine in Indy just a few weeks ago. I mean, it seems like forever ago now, but
Doesn't it really
was only a couple of weeks ago.
I know.
And we had the chance to listen to these guys talk in their press conferences following their weightlifting competition or exhibition, I guess is more like what it is. And, you know, it was great to listen to them, but that's all we got in terms of firsthand information. It's always good to get these folks on from these different marketplaces who cover these teams. They know a little bit more about them because they've been tracking them all year. And so I'm looking forward to finding out more about Bowles because he is a very intriguing prospect, very confident guy for sure, large man. And, you know, we're gonna see what we can find out.
And it seems like he's a bit of a mean streak, too. So put all that together, it means he's probably a pretty good offensive lineman. So, again, we hope to have Sean any minute now. As soon as we have him, we'll bring him up and talk about some of those guys coming out of Utah. And Paul, Utah is one of those programs, too, that has really taken a step forward, you know, with a lot of stuff with the big conferences moving into them now. So it's taken that step from into an upper echelon football program.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, I think years ago you would have thought more about basketball when you talked about them. And, you know, but there's
Rick Majerus and all those guys, of course.
You know, to me, and I was always a big Rick Majerus fan. I don't mind telling you.
Yep.
I always liked him a lot. I thought he was a good basketball man. I thought he was a great personality. I thought he was really good when he came on TV.
He's not a Paisan, though.
He's not, but I liked him anyway. In any event, certainly, they've got some interesting prospects that I'm looking forward to hearing about from Sean.
Yeah, Garrett Bowles. We'll talk about Marcus Williams, the safety. We'll talk about Joe Williams, the running back. We'll talk about Peter Tamupenu, the defensive lineman. I think I got that one right.
Very nice.
I'll try that one again. Then we have Isaac Asiata as well, the offensive guard. I'm not sure if he's related to Matt Asiata. That'll be one of the questions we ask.
Okay.
The running back for the Minnesota Vikings. Anyway, not a whole lot going on. We had, you know, on Giants.com, you can take a look. It's there. What John Mara spoke about at the Combine, what Ben McAdoo said at the Combine. Not a whole lot there other than what we've heard before, and it's kind of a continuation, Paul, of what you mentioned. We heard from Ben McAdoo at the Combine. When it was becoming clear there wasn't going to be a good option in free agency at left tackle, that this team has confidence in Ereck Flowers to put things together, take another step, improve, and be the left tackle this year, and then they're going to move forward with him and hope it works out.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we kind of picked up on once we got to the combine, if we didn't pick it up earlier, was that the odds were getting increasingly more like Flowers was going to be their best solution. And, you know, once we got back from Indianapolis, it became even more clear to me that would probably be the best way to go.
And that was the market. That was just based on what was out there, and it's kind of where the Giants have gone with this. So that's the deal with that. There really wasn't a whole lot else from Ben McAdoo that maybe they'll try to use a little bit more in terms of personnel packages and personnel groupings with the benefit and versatility of Rhett Ellison and his addition as a fullback or a tight end. Ben McAdoo said, "I'm not sure where people got the idea where I didn't want to carry a fullback on the roster."
Well, what had happened, as I recall, and I don't think he's misremembering or anything of that nature.
Right.
As I recall, what had happened was, remember, Whitlock went IR, then Will Johnson went on IR, and they looked at their personnel groupings, and as he further explained yesterday when he got into it more, if you want to be careful not to take it out of context, some of the writers do that, is he said, "We had to make sure that we had value out of all the guys we could put on the field and not just have someone on the field for six or seven plays a game." Well, it was determined at that point that they'd be better off and get more value out of their roster if they had the extra wide receiver and played it that way and used those guys more in the game than trying to go out and grab a fullback. They just thought that roster spot was more valuable to them as a receiver than to go get a fullback who may only play six or seven snaps.
Right.
That was the decision made. So
They wanted a fullback. Their two guys they had just didn't work out, and then they didn't think it was worth teaching a new person the system over what they already had on the roster.
So now you have to weigh the value, and then you make a relative decision as opposed to, oh, McAdoo didn't want a fullback.
Well, here's the thing.
That's different.
I do think it's probably fair to say he doesn't want a one-dimensional fullback. Because he wouldn't,
that's obvious.
Because he wouldn't be on the field enough. And I think that's the
obvious.
Point.
Yeah.
He wants a guy that can play fullback but also do other stuff.
Yes.
He doesn't just want that battering ram that's going to run into the linebacker in the hole and push him aside. Now, he wants this guy to be able to do that, but he needs him to do more so he can get on the field more. That's the point, I think.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And so, you know, at the time, I don't think the Giants felt like they could acquire that type of player in those time constraints, and given what they had already established. They were kind of already getting the ball rolling on the season, and they decided this is it. This is what we're going to do. This is our best-case scenario. We love our wide receiving core. We think we can get more value and more snaps out of every one of those guys. And that's how I read it. I continue to believe that's the case. In fact, what McAdoo said yesterday makes me feel that, indeed, that was the correct way to read it. But the bottom line is this, whether or not you call Ellison a tight end, an H-back, or a fullback, he plays all three positions, and I guarantee you he will line up at least once at every single one of those positions during the course of a game.
Thank you for joining us on Twitter. We hope to have Sean O'Connell covers the Utah Utes with us in just a couple of minutes. If you want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app, and you can watch the rest of the program there. Hey, Paulie, you want to try to get a couple more calls in before we
get
to our guests?
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Might as well do it. Let's do it, and we'll try to squeeze other people in as we come along as well. Let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. He's up first on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Len.
Hey, guys. I was just settling in. I thought I was going to have to wait for a while because you had the guy from Utah coming in, but this is great.
We stuck you in.
Always good to talk to you guys. So starting to look forward to the draft. At 23, I hope we hold our positions and do with it as we can. I think the first three rounds are favorable. 23, 55, 87, if I've done the arithmetic correct. I think we can get good players. So I think we can get a real good player at 23.
Oh, yeah.
It may be at a position we don't quite expect. Maybe it's a cornerback. Who knows? But I think we're going to get some good players. Once you get past three, that fourth-round pick is almost like a late fifth-round pick with the penalty being applied. I think I counted up. There's over 50 picks that go by before we get to the – to our fourth-round pick there. I guess we're at the end. I guess we're the last pick in the fourth round.
Yeah, and,
after the comp picks.
It's 140 overall.
And, it's Len, it's funny, and I'll jump in here real quick, and I'll let you finish up and finish your points. But somebody tweeted me the other day and asked me about corner, and I thought that was interesting. And this was from Jean-Pierre Rousseau. And he asked me if he thought it would be possible that the Giants pick a corner in that first round. And my answer was that, look, I think they'll definitely be a really good corner there because cornerback is such a deep class. But to me, because it's such a deep class, if you want to add a corner, which I'd be fine with, by the way, I think it makes more sense to do it in rounds two or three rather than one necessarily because you don't need them to get on the field and contribute right away.
Totally on board with that. I might not even take a corner to round four or five, to be perfectly frank with you.
Hey, Len, do me a favor. We have our guest on the line. We're going to give you a choice. You can either make one more point, we'll say goodbye, or I'll put you back on hold and we'll get you after the guest is over.
Hey, put me on hold, John. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you.
We're going to put you back on hold, Len, and now we're going to welcome in Sean O'Connell. He's a host at ESPN 700 Salt Lake City, former Utah tight end, and he covers the Utes out there, and he joins us right now on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Sean, you got John Schmoke and Paul Dottino with you here. How you doing today? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Excited to talk about some Utes.
Absolutely.
We can tell.
And and we are excited to talk about the big offensive lineman coming out of Utah. The Giants are in need of some depth and some help at offensive tackle, and both Paul and I were out at the combine, Sean, and a lot of people told us they believe Garrett Bowles athletically is the best tackle in this class. What was your take watching him at Utah for the 1 year he has been there?
But like you said, he's only been there 1 year, and that's enough to get a pretty good assessment of a guy, but maybe not ideal because I would have liked to have seen him stay for another year. That being said, he's making the correct decision for himself and his family. He's going to make a lot of money. Might be a first-round draft pick if you pay attention to the mocks that have been coming out for a couple months now. He absolutely is the best tackle athletically in this draft, but he's a little bit lacking in terms of just raw physical strength and power. That could be a problem for him at the next level. And there's some room left for improvement in his pass blocking technique for sure.
Well, now, to me, it's kind of interesting because when we talked to him at the draft, he seemed, and I think every prospect seems confident, that he's going to be able to contribute right away. Just by what you said moments ago, that says to me maybe he's not a week one plug-and-play starter. And I mention this, Sean, because we got the impression from being out at the combine there may not be a week one plug-and-play starter amongst any of the tackles, first round or otherwise, in this draft.
Yeah, I think that might be one of the problems that NFL teams face this year. And don't get me wrong, Garrett Bowles and probably a couple of other guys are going to be put into a situation where they are plugged in and they are started right away. That's less than ideal, though, because Garrett himself would tell you that he would prefer to be physically stronger. He's a guy with a ton of nastiness, a ton of speed and mobility, but he's not a grinder. He's not a mauler. He's not one of those road grader types, and I get it. In the NFL, you don't have to be that always to play tackle. But it's just one of those things that if my team is drafted in the first round and they're going to plug this kid into play right away, I don't want to see him getting eaten alive by some of those big 3-4 defensive ends or even, you know, the freakish athletes that play outside linebacker now. It's going to be a tough transition for him. But that being said, I expected the same thing when he came from junior college to Pac-12 play, and he ended up being a first-team all-conference performer and put enough on tape that he didn't feel like he needed to come back for another year. So the kid rises to the occasion for sure.
Yeah, Sean, and I'm not surprised. And you mentioned he was in JUCO for 2 years. He's going to be 25 when the season starts, so he's an older prospect. He, you know, went through a lot of stuff in his early life that he battled through. You like to see that, the perseverance. But it doesn't surprise me, given his lack of experience, some of the technique issues you mentioned in addition to his strength. Are we talking hand placement, hand usage? Are we talking, you know, balance and, keeping back and keeping, you know, your shoulders over your feet? What are you talking about in terms of technique, some of the stuff in pass protection that you really think he needs to improve on?
Well, it's all about hand placement for him because he's not a lunger. He's not a headbutter. He's not one of those guys who lets his hips and feet, you know, get out of concert. He's just a guy that when people, particularly when pass rushers go across his face, his hand placement is less than ideal, and he can get himself sucked into a holding situation or – you know, he just whiffs and he gets beat. And that's something that people on NFL tape, they're going to find that quickly, and you're going to see a lot of guys trying to do spin moves and rip right back across his face. So his inside hand in particular, and he played left tackle, obviously, at the University of Utah, but maybe at the next level he's playing right tackle. His inside hand needs to be a lot stronger. And, you know, you guys got offensive line coaches out there that will address those things. But it's a glaring weakness on film, maybe the only glaring weakness in his game on film.
All right, now, there are three other offensive linemen. And if you can give me just a quick thumbnail and then maybe go a little bit more into detail with maybe John will follow up. There's Asiata, who's a guard. And there's Tevi, who's a tackle. And I guess is it Dielman or Dielman, who was also a tackle on that squad, who also seem to have later projections in the draft and maybe can help somebody depth-wise, if not at some point develop into a potential starter. How about some thoughts on those guys, if you can?
I'll start with J.J. Dielman because Dielman was an all-conference performer in his junior season. He came back with Bowles coming in. They moved him to center, actually, because they wanted to get the best five offensive linemen out there on the field, and there was a lot of experience. There's a lot of talent in this group, so they moved Dielman to center. Unfortunately, his season was cut short in the Cal game, and he's coming back off an injury. He actually didn't even participate in the combine or pro day because of that injury. We're expecting him to have kind of his own his own workouts, his own public pro day at the, towards the middle of April, when his foot and ankle are 100% better. But he is a phenomenal, intelligent, physical offensive lineman. He has played at the Pac-12 level. He's played guard, center, and tackle now, so that versatility is always helpful to NFL teams. He is going to be a late-round, a free agent guy, but he will stick on a roster because of that versatility, and he'll be a great asset for whatever team picks him up. Kevy surprisingly underperformed athletically at both the combine and his pro day. He's a guy who converted from defensive tackle during his career and had a ton of athleticism. I don't know if it was a nervousness, a lack of preparation, or whatever, but he didn't put up any numbers. I think he dropped himself all the way out of the draft because of that. He's a guy with a ton of upside and a ton of promise. Unbelievable footwork, probably the best of any Utah offensive lineman. But he didn't do a great job in his workouts, and that's going to be something that hurts him come draft day and probably in the process of trying to make a squad beyond. You mentioned Isaac Asiata, and he won the Morris Trophy out in the Pac-12. And if you guys aren't familiar with that, it's an award where you're given that award by opposing defensive linemen. The starters in the conference vote on which offensive lineman terrorized them the most, which offensive lineman was toughest for them to go against. And he won that award. He is a load. He's an intelligent guy. He's a charismatic guy. He'll probably be, I would think, you know, maybe a late second-round pick at best, more realistically, third- or fourth-round pick. And any team that gets him is going to be very pleased, not only with his talent and his technique, but with the person that they're getting in the whole package. He's a married guy. He's a mature guy. He's a super charismatic and intelligent young man. I always joke, we talk about him still. I tell people, when his NFL career is done, he's going to come back and be the governor of Utah because he's that likable.
He goes, we're listing him, at least what I've seen, 6'3", 323. Is that where he plays at?
Yeah, and, you know, we've seen him actually bigger than that. That was his junior season, he was about 340 and a true, you know, level and road grader. We get those at the University of Utah every once in a while. I don't know if you remember Chris K. Moyatu.
But sure.
He's in that mold, that Isaac Asiata, nicest guy you'll ever meet off the field, always smiling. On the field, nasty, borderline dirty, just an absolute terror.
And no wonder Joe Williams was able to run for 1,400 yards this year behind this unbelievable offensive line, Sean. And, boy, he's interesting. I'll do a very quick little thumbnail for the fans out there who might not be familiar with him. Then I'd love for you to expand on him, his character on off the field, and his play. He was at, you know, UConn. He had something off the field, got him kicked off. He retired for a year after working his way back in. Then you guys had a couple injuries. He came back and rushed for 1,400 yards. Sean, anything else you could add to that to kind of give the fans an idea of what kind of player and guy he is? Because I'm sure a lot of NFL teams are doing a lot of background research on him to seeing if he's the type of guy they want in their locker room.
It's really interesting because all the questions about Joe are character-based, right? And their dedication to the game-based now. It's not about his talent. It's not about his explosiveness. He's proven that in spades. You know, you mentioned his 1,400-yard season. That was done in 8 games because he voluntarily walked away from the game of football. He felt like he was burnt out on it. In the first 2 games of the year, he wasn't running hard. He wasn't playing well. He was losing reps, and he walked away. And, you know, he said retired. When I talk to people inside football, they question him. They say, why did you quit? Retire is a very fancy word for a kid walking away, you know. And,
yeah.
And we've all experienced frustration when our talent isn't matching up with our production and things like that. But the kid walked away, and the running back class or the running back position group at the University of Utah was freakishly depleted by a rash of injuries. I mean, they were down to a 5th-string walk-on playing against Cal, and they said, Joe, we need you back. And he came back. He had a great relationship with Dennis Erickson, who is the running backs coach here, and every one of his teammates were supportive of him when he walked away in the first place. He comes back 4 games later, and he goes for 200-plus, and then for a school record, almost 300 yards, and then another 200, So in eight games, he put up, the second-best running back season in the Pac-12, and now he has to answer the question, you got 4.3 speed, you're over 200 pounds, why would you watch a game of football?
Yeah, and I can imagine what those interview sessions were like in his interview process with some of these scouts, sure.
Yeah, Sean, I want to follow up. I'm sure you've talked to him and you've had some contact with him. What's your take? Do you think his success late in the year and his short time away reignited his love for the game? Do you think he'll be able to convince NFL teams that he really does love this thing and, not to sound crass, isn't just going to go try and do this for the paycheck?
Well, I think there's a lot of guys in the league who are doing it for the paycheck. So I don't know how they're actually going to hold that against him.
Okay.
But I try to put myself in a young kid's shoes, right? 21, 22 years old, and he makes probably a knee-jerk reaction decision to walk away from a game that has defined him for his entire life.
Right.
Now, in almost every case, a guy walks away from a scholarship, walks away from a football team, coach is never calling you back. They're snickering behind your back in the facility, and they're saying, all right, well, that sucks.
Yep.
Good riddance. If you don't want to be here, we don't want you here.
Good point.
In almost every case where a guy has walked away from football, he has never gotten an opportunity to come back. And Joe gets that rare case opportunity to come back and play the game again, and he did so at such a high level and was so successful behind that super talented offensive line that we were just talking about. And he saw the fan base here in Utah embrace him again, and everyone accepted his apologies, and his family was supportive of his decision. And I think that it's just a super, super rare case of a guy getting a second chance that most people don't get and acknowledging how rare that is and how fortunate he is to have been able to come back and have that success. And I think that he loves the game again because – he probably loved it when he walked away, and he probably regretted walking away. He'll tell you that he didn't because he thinks the right thing to do is say, I was making the correct decision for myself. But, man, the kid was relieved when he got back on that football field, I promise you.
Good point, Sean.
One more guy I got to ask you about, Sean, because to me, of all the guys that you've talked about so far, even including Joe, Brian Allen may be the most intriguing of all. 6'3", runs into 4.4s, has played multiple positions. Some people could see him as a receiver, some as a safety, some as a cornerback. What do you see from this guy who, by the way, had a terrific combine and blew it up with his workout numbers?
Yeah, Brian Allen, I call him Avatar because he's so tall and long. The guy He's an athletic freak. He's a super sharp, and he's a smart guy. The issue with him is a lack of experience at the corner position. Now, he ended up working his way into a starting role, but he was a receiver when he came to the University of Utah, and like so many guys who just don't have the soft hands to stay at receiver, coach moved him to play defensive back. And in the NFL, you've got 6'5" receivers, you've got 6'4" receivers, and a lot of guys just don't have the size and athleticism and pure strength to stay with some of those Roddy Whites and Larry Fitzgeralds. Well, Brian Allen has the physical tools. For him, it's still a matter of mastering the technique, being disciplined with his eyes into the backfield, better communication with the safeties and his fellow defensive backs, his nickels and guys that are, passing off coverage and things like that. I think that if he had been a full-time corner for his entire college career, there'd be no question that this guy was a late first-round, early second-round pick. But because he's still learning the position, he's effectively played it for a year and a half. It's going to take some time for him to let his skill set catch up with his athleticism. But when it does, boy, look out.
Is he a safety, then, in your mind, when he gets to the NFL?
No, you got to let the kid play corner.
Okay.
I don't know that he has the put your nose in the box kind of physicality to play safety. He doesn't shy away from contact, but with the way that he's able to flip his hips and some of the footwork that he's displayed, even in less than 18 months training the position, I would think it was a waste to not really polish him up as a corner.
Sean, I got two more quick guys on defense. One, Marcus Williams. It seems like he's your classic, traditional, single-high, sideline-to-sideline type of safety, something that the NFL really values these days. Is that how you view him and his strength in the NFL is in coverage?
Absolutely. His strength is in coverage. He's got incredible ball skills. His movement is just smooth as butter. Marcus Williams is going to be a great value for whoever gets him. He's one of those guys that when you talk to him, he's decently sharp, but he is a genius on the football field. He is his calling in life is to play safety and to move sideline to sideline and to cover guys. I mean, it's just what he was built to do. And when you watch him move, it's absolutely a thing of beauty. It's ballet back there. He's not shy about coming up and hitting a running back in run support, but where he's really going to make his money and he's really going to make a team happy is helping out in deep coverage.
And then finally, Hunter Dimick, defensive end. He seems to check in at your classic size-wise as a 4-3 DN, 6'3", 269. He has the height and weight, but it seems like the old stereotype of, oh, he's not that great of an athlete, but he tries hard, and that's how he got his 14 sacks last year. How do you see him projecting to the National Football League, and do you think people are sleeping on him a little bit?
Yeah, it's funny because everyone tells the white farm boy from Utah that he's not a good athlete. He ran 4.69 at 273 pounds at pro day, and he bench pressed 225 38 times, which would have been good for a combine best.
I didn't realize he ran a 4.69 at his pro day.
He ran a 4.69. There were
wow.
I talked to a couple of scouts at him at 4.64 because you know the pro days is just a bunch of guys sitting around with stopwatches.
Yeah,
yeah. He ran well. He lifted. He got 38 reps. He's the strongest guy in the combine if he gets invited to the combine. He beats his own teammate, Isaac Asiata, for the record this year.
Wow.
He's the all-time sack leader at the University of Utah. He's great in run stopping. He cares only about football. Kid has no social media accounts. He's just an absolute throwback. And if we were playing football in the late 70s or early 80s, no question teams are, you know, excited about this kid. He wasn't overly explosive, I'll be fair. He wasn't overly explosive in the way that he jumped at the pro day. His vertical was, I think, right around 30 inches, and his broad jump was only like 9.5. So he's no Myles Garrett. But boy, he's a football savant like Marcus Williams is. All he cares about is playing the game. Whoever picks him up is going to get a great rotational player who's strong enough to slide down and do whatever they ask him to do, even play it inside. He's got a whole just gamut and toolbox full of pass rush moves, and he surprises the hell out of everyone because he looks like Shrek, but boy, this kid can play football.
Sean, I got to tell you, I'm remiss in that I have not gotten to my Utah tape study yet before our spot, and I should have. It's bad on my part as a host. I'm always supposed to get the homework done, and I never got to the tape of Utah before our spot. But after listening to you, I think I need to go to the national championship game tape because Utah should have been the national champion because they obviously got so many, quote, football players on that team, you know? Football players. That's what coaches love, especially in the NFL. They love guys who are players. Scouts and pro personnel guys, they like the measurables. Coaches love players. You know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. And look, say what you want about Kyle Whittingham and his old school style and his conservative defense, run the ball kind of attitude towards winning football games. The man doesn't get enamored with the five-star recruit. I mean, yeah, they chase him. But consistently, the University of Utah brings in two-star, three-star, sometimes no-star kids, and they turn them into NFL football players, particularly on the defensive line and in the defensive backfield. I mean, this team has put some stellar athletes out there, some stellar football players out there, and guys stay on rosters even if they're not the best athlete in the world because they're prepared to work hard and be a student of the game when they're at the University of Utah. Unfortunately, you know, it's five or six guys a year instead of 22 starters that are really that up. You know? Or we wouldn't be talking about the youth in a national championship and even a Pac-12 championship that they're still chasing. You know, it's a team that will drive you nuts following them, but, boy, it's a lot of fun because you get five or six guys out of the program every year that you're like, how are you capable of doing this? you went to high school here locally, and nobody knew your name outside of the state, and yet, wow. You know, you're going to end up on the NFL roster.
Sean, awesome stuff, man. We appreciate the time. Thanks for all the information.
Thank you, Sean.
And we'll talk to you down the road. All right, pal?
All right, sounds good. Thanks, fellas.
Great stuff.
Awesome job, Sean O'Connell, giving us a lot of great information about Utah. Of course, he's on ESPN 700 in Salt Lake City. And, Paul, I think you're going to go and run and watch that defensive end's tape. He seems like he's right up your alley.
John, I'm going to tell you, right now, I've got all my stuff, like, cataloged on how I'm going to do it. I'm going to probably have to double look and triple look now at all my Utah tape because – these guys, you're right. These guys sound like they're going to get me, like, salivating. My tongue's going to be on the floor looking at these Utah Utes. Just saying. I will say this. Sean, I'm so glad you were with us today because these are guys who you usually don't, outside of course, bowls, you don't usually talk of in the premier conversations about really stellar prospects. But the way he talked about them makes it almost seem like they got a bunch of guys who you got to peel the top layer off of to know more about.
And you know what? And actually, this actually makes me more enthusiastic about the last couple guys he talked about.
Oh, yeah.
You know why?
For sure.
Because when he talked about Bowles, he was honest about his flaws.
Yes.
And he talked about technique a problem, the hand use a problem, maybe not strong enough right off the bat. And that was without us even asking about it specifically. That was him volunteering that information.
Without a doubt.
And I'm curious to see how some of these other guys, like DeMarcus Williams, who probably should be a second-round pick. He's a pretty highly rated player. But, you know, the other kids that we talked about who maybe aren't talked about, how effective they can be, you know, in the NFL, you know, because Utah doesn't run that. Like you said, they don't run your traditional college spread offense, so you wonder maybe their players might project a little bit better to the NFL than maybe some of these other programs.
I tell you what, I love what he said about Brian Allen. You're talking about a guy who ran in a high 4.40s as a 6.3, as a corner, who he said had terrific hips and turnability and smoothness, and all he needs is to coach him up and to get experience at the position. What NFL team would not want a 6.3 in the 4.4s playing cornerback? And if you can hide him, like, oh, Giants have three terrific corners already on their roster.
And develop him, right?
If you can put this guy in effect, redshirt him for a year, holy smokes. It sounds to me, again, and I know Sean is not a talent evaluator. He's just a guy who played, you know, tight end in college football, albeit Division I. He's not a talent evaluator. But if his eye is correct, that says to me, someone could be getting a fourth-round corner who could be a freak of a player in a couple of years.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, and we'll try to. I'm working on getting somebody on from Miami tomorrow to join Jeff Fiegels and I. I just saw a text come in. No, not yet, but I'm waiting to hear back from somebody about that Miami spot tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll have trying to reach out to the sideline reporter out there. Otherwise, I'll find somebody. I got to have Fiegels be able to talk to somebody from the U. He'll get all excited.
Oh, you know. He's got about a bookload full of people from the U you can talk to.
And then mark it. We have, and I will count the number of shows for you right now, and then Len will get to you. I know you've been holding patiently. The draft is on the 27th, so we will have 3 full weeks of shows, and then 3 more shows the week of the draft. So we'll have 18 shows after this week to do a few more schools. We got probably about 6 to 8 schools left, I'd say, give or take, on our list that we haven't done yet.
That was about it.
Maybe 10. We'll go through the list after the show and figure out who's coming on next week, and then we'll have our, obviously, draft guys on too. As we get closer, and I like to save those guys for the last week before the draft because that's after all the teams have their meetings and stuff begins to leak about where guys are going. Because I don't want to bring those draft guys on and ask them about the same prospects we talked to about at the combine. We want to start talking about where guys are going to fall, and they're the best ones to sift through who's telling the truth and who's lying.
Be careful when you say leaks are coming out. That could be smoke that's puffing.
Right. No, exactly. And that's the trick. You have to figure out what information's good and what's bad. And a lot of these guys, like, you know, Tony Pollin's been doing this for 17 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, guys like that can sift through and figure out what's lit, what's legit, and what's nonsense.
Got the spidey sense going.
Exactly. So we'll have those guys on as we get closer to the draft, and we'll finish our colleges over the next couple of weeks as well. 201-939-4513, guys. Get on the line. We'll take calls the rest of the way, talk about the draft, free agency, you name it. We'll talk about it when it comes to the New York Football Giants. Len in Maryland will finish up his call. Len, thank you for holding. I hope you enjoyed the spot.
Yeah, excellent. These have been real good. It makes you wish you had 77 picks instead of 7.
I know, right? You know what, Len? Funny enough,
I started off on my call.
The Browns have 77 picks.
Those first three rounds are going to be interesting. Yes, sorry.
Go ahead. I was just making a joke. I think the Browns almost have 77 picks in this year.
The Patriots probably do, too.
There you go. Listen, and I wanted to say when I first got back on, you know, it was worth the wait getting to talk to Paul twice in one day.
Oh boy,
is really a privilege.
Oh my,
so I appreciate.
You'll have to spend an hour with the therapist
that
later.
Listen, let me go back to my point where I said I thought we were going to get a good player. It may turn out to be a cornerback, and you guys started talking about third and fourth rounds. I wasn't necessarily advocating for a cornerback. I was just suggesting to you that on that tier on our draft board, there is likely to be some cornerbacks.
Oh yeah.
And if you follow best player available theory, it may very well be that Jerry says, hey, let's take the best player available. He's a cornerback. So I wasn't advocating.
Yeah, I hear you.
I was just suggesting that it's likely there's going to be some really, really good corners.
No argument.
At that 23rd pick.
I agree with you. No argument.
Yeah. Listen, let me talk about the left tackle position. I agree with the consensus view. It's going to be Flowers, and at left tackle, at least starting there anyway. And I'm on board with that. You know, sometimes you just have to say, you know, how wrong can the scouts be? You know, we had this guy, ninth pick in the draft. He's eventually going to come around, and I think it's his position, and he needs the opportunity to prove to us that he can play that position long term. Here's my concern, and Charlie raised it somewhat yesterday or the day before yesterday when he was on. Who's the backup on that side?
That's a good question,
Paul. I know it's early. We got a lot of time before the season starts, but. If we were day one and he had to come off the field for a few plays, who goes to left tackle? Who goes next week if his injury is such that he can't play the next week? It seems like we're right side oriented, not only in who's on the roster, but who we talk about in terms of possible draft picks.
I got the impression.
Who do you think?
I got the impression, and I'm doing a little bit of reading here, that if it was March 30th, the backup left tackle is Justin Pugh. I got that impression based on the...
What gave you that impression?
Based on what Coach McAdoo said at the league meeting's breakfast when he said that Fluker could also play some left guard and right tackle. Well, that says to me, if you had to put Pugh out to left tackle, then Fluker is probably your left guard.
Which is not ideal, obviously, but if you have to do it, you have to do it.
I think today, if you had to do it,
it's
that
Pugh.
Would be the backup emergency plan.
I agree with that.
But, Len, I'm telling you what I have said to everybody all along, even when I started backing off of a first-round offensive tackle, it is my strong belief the Giants need to draft an offensive tackle in rounds 2 or 3, okay, by the end of the second day.
Does it have to be a left tackle or one or the other?
It would be a guy who, to me, has had left tackle experience in college.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
could develop into that.
And better be able to do it quickly because I'd like that guy to be the backup left tackle to Flowers, hoping that I would not necessarily need him in a game, but that if I had to throw him out there, he would not be a fish out of water. Because let's face it, Len, you could have 9 offensive linemen on the roster. I've gone over this with Lance before. I'll go over it with John right now. You have your 5 starters. You have your backup in Brett Jones. He'll be the backup center. We know that. That's number 6. We have the loser of the competition on the right side, whoever that is. That is number 7. Who are 8? Who are 9? There's room here for 2 new offensive linemen, whether they be someone who comes out of the current 90, whether it comes out of the draft, whether it comes out of a veteran free agent who walks on in July. I don't know who they're going to be. But in my mind, 8 and 9 are undecided. I would love for 8 or 9 to be like a second or third round tackle who really has some upside. That's who I would like it to be.
Yeah, well, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Let's hope it turns out that way, Paul, because right now I think we're stymied a little bit. We've got to make some changes with the starters if something happens to Flowers in game off, even if it's just for a couple of week period. You know, just one thing, I'm thinking about Brett Jones. You're higher on Brett Jones than I am, but the one thing that he takes with him, I think one of his strengths is he does play two positions.
Sure does.
It's hard to dress a guy
smart.
On Sunday.
Very smart, Len.
Who's only a backup center, Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like it's a wasted spot.
No doubt. And his work ethic, his smarts, his eagerness to learn, the coaches really love that kid. And I got to tell you something. If he was physically, frame-wise, a little bit bigger,
yeah.
And that's his limitation. That is his limitation. He's short, and he's not the heaviest guy in the world. But, Len, look, mentally, you're right. He can play both spots, and that's why he's valuable. It's the same reason Kevin Booth is valuable. He can play guard and center. Same deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, now, with Bobby Hart, if I'm Bobby Hart, I want to learn as much as I can about playing guard, because I think the long-term future for Bobby Hart to stay in this league 6, 7, maybe even 8 years is if he can play two positions.
Yeah.
And maybe if he's not a starter, you know, he's seen, like you guys were viewing Brett Jones, you know, he can play two positions, he can make this team, and he has a long NFL career. Hopefully he's our right tackle, but I'm just saying, if I'm Bobby Hart, I'm learning as much as I can about playing the guard position as well.
I'm with you.
Can I talk about the defense for a minute?
Yeah, you got to be real fast.
Okay. To me, the two most undervalued positions on defense in Jerry's mind, and this is not a criticism, it's just I think this is just the way he thinks, is that three technique tackle and the middle linebacker position. So here's the question I want to ask you. Can we achieve what we think we can achieve next year? I've got us going well into January playing games. Hopefully further than that. Can we have less of a performance out of that three technique tackle or less of a performance out of middle linebacker and still get that far?
If the offense improves enough, I think yes, but I also wouldn't expect to have a lesser performance out of middle linebacker based on what you had last year, because Keenan Robinson's back, and you would assume he's going to give you about the same. And I would think that B.J. Goodson, if he continues to improve, could give you a little bit more than Shepard did on first and second down. And the other thing I'll say, too, I don't think they undervalue the three technique defensive tackle line, and here's why.
Okay.
I think they're so comfortable rotating in passing situations, a defensive end into that spot, that they don't feel it necessary to, you know, pay and invest capital and equity into a three-down, three-technique, because they know in passing situations, they can move one of their D-ends, which, as you well know, they value a whole hell of a lot in there.
Let's face it, Len. The
so
sub-package.
What you're saying is between 00, Oxwara, Wynn, JPP, Bromley and Thomas, maybe we can scheme our way through.
And Kennard.
That three technique tackle spot.
Yeah.
There's probably no situation that we don't have a guy who can go in.
Ola
and
too.
Thank you, Len.
Thank you, Len.
You got to roll.
Okay. Here's the thing. And, John.
And by the way, Devon Kennard, too. Don't forget him, because he played that defensive tackle spot.
You stated it well. And another way to say it is simple. The sub package has changed the way we view some of the standard old-fashioned positions on the field. And I'm actually using that phrase, even though I'm old school, I'm using that phrase, and it's okay. I know, you're shocked.
Shocked. But I think you make a good point, Paul, and I think there's value in having that three-down, three-technique defensive tackle. There is certainly value in a guy that can stop throwing and rush the passer, but there's so few and far between. I mean, how many really good three-technique tackles are there in the league? I mean, you got the kid down in Tampa, McCoy, right? You got Aaron Donald, obviously, who's really good at that spot. I'm forgetting.
Those are the premier guys.
Who's the third? Fletcher Cox. That's another one.
Yeah.
Who's an excellent three-technique defensive tackle.
No question.
He's in the mix there, too. And in the NFC, those are your three guys.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the three guys that kept Snacks off of the Pro Bowl roster, by the way. And
yes, they are.
And they're all really good players.
Yes, they are.
No argument for me.
No, on that point at all.
But, you know, think of it this way. You say you don't value the three technique. They went and gave Chris Canty an awful lot of money to play that position in free agency 6, 7 years ago.
And got a Super Bowl out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, again, again, I think you could say, okay, that the way the game has evolved, it just turned like the fullback, the standard fullback is a dinosaur now. This is not a dinosaur yet, but it's certainly a rarer breed than it used to be.
201-939-4513. Matt in East Islip has been holding very patiently. Matt, thank you for calling in. How are you?
Absolutely. Good, guys. How are you?
Doing well, Matt. What's up?
Good. So I got a little quick story, and then I want to make a point about a prospect.
Sure.
My story is, so you guys know I call in every once in a while and, you know, listen all the time and stuff. And last year I heard Rick Saratella come on, and he, you know, from the NFL Draft Bible, and I really liked what he had to say. And being a guy in college, I kind of reached out to him, and I have my own podcast, and I asked him if he could come on my podcast, and based off hearing him on Big Blue Kickoff, and he said, yeah, that'd be great, and we do a draft podcast, and he was excited to come on. So he came on at Indy, and then I reached out to him because I'm trying to get into scouting stuff. So he actually had me come out to the Fordham Pro Day yesterday with him, and it was a great experience. I got to see, you know, I know Henry Hynoski is scouting for the Giants now. I got to kind of meet him and see the process. It was awesome. So for me, trying to break into the industry, it was fun. But
good.
I will say it never would have happened without Big Blue Kickoff. So it was kind of started there. So
very
awesome.
Cool.
Matt, yeah, that's awesome. And you know what? Rick is a good guy to contact because he's a real nice guy. He's a real good dude.
Jersey guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe he is. Yeah. And, you know, I'm happy that worked out for you. That's excellent.
Yeah. No, it was great. So it was cool. Anyway, I have a point about one guy. John, I tweeted it to you the other day. And there's a couple of reasons behind why I suggest this player.
Sure, go ahead.
It's Tyus Bowser from Houston. Mm-hmm. Now, Paul, I know you may cringe because you and I are similar in the tweener category. I'm not a fan of that, and I think he fits in that mold.
Sure he does.
But if you look at the Giants last year when they had an affinity with Leonard Floyd, if you look at those two players, they're very similar except the 3-inch height difference. Tyus Bowser is 6'3", Leonard Floyd 6'6". Their combine numbers are actually comparable. The only difference with Tyus Bowser is – he's not as quick twitch as Leonard Floyd was, which can make a difference. But, you know, if you look at the Giants, there's a lot of talk always about them looking for more speed out of the linebacker position. You know, they're trying to do that, obviously, with Kennard off the edge, get some pass rush from him, and that's worked out. But I think that they always look for more. So I could see Tyus Bowser being a guy in the mid-rounds that the Giants target based off of their missing out of Leonard Floyd last year, and I think that they kind of like that type of player. Just curious on your thoughts on that, guys.
Yeah, you know what? I think he does kind of fit the Leonard Floyd mold, to be honest with you. 6'3", 247, and he did really well at the combine. His jumps and his three-cone drill, you know, the jumping stuff measures explosiveness. The three-cone measures kind of that short area quickness, and he ran a 4.65 40 at 245 pounds. So that's really, really good. So, yeah, I mean, I do think your comparison to Leonard Floyd is strong. And, look, but we talked about Leonard Floyd last year on the show a lot, and we kind of talked about how they would use him. And I think
right.
You would ask the same question here, especially given with the progress that Devon Kennard made last year, being able to stay healthy for the whole year. I just wonder where the utility would be for him, depending on where you would take him. I imagine he would probably be a day 2 pick, Bowser, right, you figure?
Yeah, I would definitely think so.
Yeah.
I mean, in my estimation, I think he's a solid number third-round guy. You know, I've seen some people creep him up into the 2s, but I think that would really be based off of, like, scheme fit and, again, like, pure affinity for him. I don't really think he's a second-round guy. But I would be comfortable if the Giants had to take him in the third. You know, they took him in the third and took a tackle in the first or second, and then obviously that other position swapping with that. Tyus Bowser, I think, is definitely a name to watch, especially a guy who he can cover too now. You know, he can cover. I mean, he's not the best at it, but he can cover, which I think Leonard Floyd lacked a little bit more so than he does. So
see, that's my sore spot for you here because you know how I feel about that style of player, and I would actually argue I don't think Leonard Floyd's very good. I didn't like him coming out as a fit for the Giants. I didn't quite frankly like him as a prospect for my taste. And I think he's a one-dimensional player. I think he's a straight-ahead player who needs to play in space, who can rush the passer. And that's all he can do. I don't see him as a run stopper. I don't see him as a backpedaler in coverage. I don't see him as a physical player who has the power or the strength or the ability to shed blocks. I think Leonard Floyd is a very one-dimensional player who has to be in a scheme-specific situation to excel. I believe that now more than ever. And I'll tell you, I'm glad the Giants didn't get him.
Matt, appreciate the call, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man.
I've spoken my piece.
And so it shall be. Dan in New Jersey, he's our final call of the program. Hi, Dan.
Hi, I'll make this quick. So I wanted to talk about the linebacker in the draft. Like, I was saying, who would be a better, like, taking, like, Zach Cunningham or maybe, like, a second-round pick, for, like, Gerard Davis from Florida?
Davis would be the third linebacker for me. Well, the fourth one, after you get by Reuben Foster, Reddick, and Cunningham.
Foster's upper echelon.
Yeah.
You're not even thinking about him.
And that's why I called him the third guy. The third guy that could be potentially available for the Giants at their spot. You're looking at Reddick, you're looking at Cunningham, and you're looking at Davis. I think he's a good player. He's had a lot of injury concerns, which I worry about. In a physical position, first-round pick, am I going to pick an injury-prone linebacker? Ugh. I think that's a worry for me. Physically, does he have all the skills? No question. No scouts doubt that. All the reports I've seen on him, they love him as a potential three-down linebacker. But the injury stuff scares me a little bit. If I'm going to use a first-round pick on him, I better be confident he's going to be on the field. I'm not sure I can be with Jared Davis.
I mean, I would think about it in the second if I was a team that badly needed that spot. I don't know that the Giants do. I think when you look at best player available and then you put that need quotient in with it, to me, I'd much rather see them go after, let's say, a Moten, you know, the offensive tackle in the second round. I'd rather see them go after, you know, even if they got to go second round to grab Perine, the power back out of Oklahoma. I'd rather see them do that because I think they're going to get high value and also a much bigger need than they would going after a Jared Davis, for me. Not that he's not a valued player. I think the value's there. I agree with you, John. The value's there. A little skeptical of the knee injury. But when you mix in the other value at other positions that are more of need, there'll be other value. You could even take a corner there and get a high-valued corner, and you could make an argument that the Giants would be better off taking one of those guys and making him the fourth corner this year.
Yeah, I was just looking at all these linebackers, and it's a good linebacker class, like, than other years, like, especially last year. Last year wasn't a great linebacker class.
Well, yeah, quite frankly, I'm not sure how great this year is.
I was just going to say that.
Generally speaking, the collegiate and NFL linebacker positions have kind of deviated so much from one another. I think you're not going to have that many deep, at least middle linebacker class. You're talking about a traditional stand-up linebacker.
Right.
You're not going to have many of those guys coming out anymore. There just aren't that many of them based on how these college teams are playing.
I mean, there are a few guys in the upper echelon of this draft at the linebacker spot that are quality prospects. But in terms of depth,
true Mike linebackers, you're looking at a half dozen guys.
It's not a great middle linebacker draft. It's a great defensive line draft. It's a great cornerback draft.
Good running back and tight end draft, too.
On offense.
Yep.
But on defense, those are the two positions that you can really make some moves with.
Yeah, I get that. I just wanted to end this with this. All right, so
sure.
Who do you think is more important to this Giants team at this moment, Eli Manning or Odell Beckham Jr.?
Eli Manning.
Here's
why. If Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't have a good quarterback throwing him the football, it just doesn't matter.
It's not even close.
I believe Odell Beckham is better at what he does than Eli is at what he does, if you know what I mean by that. I'm not saying that he's more valuable, but in terms of, like, elite skills and where he stands among wide receivers in the league, I think Odell is probably higher on his list of wide receivers than Eli is on his list of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to take anything away from Odell, but just the nature of the position, quarterback's always going to be more important than the wide receiver spot.
All right, well, I'll leave it there. All right, thanks for talking to me.
Hey, thanks for the call, man.
Great.
And again, I'm not trying to take anything away from either guy there.
I understand what you were getting at, and, you know, The only thing I will say also is every time somebody asks us a question about that in terms of replacing a guy or how you value a guy, part of the equation always has to be, well, who's behind him? It has to be, because you have to put someone in those snaps. Well, how do you feel about the guys behind Eli compared to the guys behind Odell? You could find a starting wide receiver on this roster a lot easier than you could find a starting quarterback on this roster.
Real quick before I say goodbye, did you see the Charlie Casserly mock draft from a couple days ago?
I did not.
I know you love Charlie Casserly.
I'm a big Charlie fan.
I know you.
I like talking to him. He's a fun guy to listen to.
A couple notes here, okay? He has no quarterbacks going. Wow. I'm still scrolling down. He is the first quarterback going to the Kansas City Chiefs at 27 in Deshaun Watson.
Wow.
How about
and,
that?
And you know what?
And he is Trubisky going to the New England Patriots at 32.
Oh, that sounds ridiculous.
Oh, in a then a projected trade to the Broncos.
Okay, that makes more sense because they've already said Garoppolo is going to be their guy for the next couple of years behind Brady. You know, the only thing I would say, I think that there are going to be a lot of people. I just have a hunch that there are a lot of people who are talking about these quarterbacks, these top three, top four guys. And maybe when push comes to shove and triggers are being pulled, these guys are going to drop a lot further than those think.
I agree with you. If we don't have one quarterback going in the top 10, it would not blow me away.
I wouldn't be shocked if no more than two go in the first round.
I agree with that as well. A couple other players of note in Charlie's mock draft. O.J. Howard, 12 to Cleveland. I think we can kind of erase that name off the board at 23, Paul. I don't think it's going to happen.
Nor do I. Look, I've been saying all along top 15.
I agree. I think he might be top 10 now, to be honest with you. I think he's that good of a player. He does everything. I mean, it's hard. You find the guy that comes out now that can do everything you need the guy to do at that position. He can do everything. It's tough. Mm-hmm. Couple other guys of note, Takaris McKinley going all the way up at 15 to the Colts. That's a little high for him, especially dealing with that shoulder injury. You know how the medical tends to scare people a little bit. He has two wide receivers in the top 16, Mike Williams to the Bills at 10 and Corey Davis to the Ravens at 16.
I can understand those picks, though.
I could also see those wide receivers dropping. That's another position I could see.
Well, Davis
going
has
a little
the foot.
Further
he's got
the
ankle thing going.
And then he has John Ross at 18. So he's three in the top 18, actually, wide receivers. John Ross at the Titans, which would be a nice addition for them.
See, somebody is going to take that combine time because he set the record and is going to elevate them on his board a lot higher than he needs to be.
And the Raiders don't pick high enough.
Good one, John.
They have the first offensive lineman off the board is Garrett Bowles to the Broncos at 20.
Wow.
21.
And again, that should not shock us, though, right? John. We're not as thrilled about these O-linemen as we once were.
Charles Harris at 21. T.J. Watt at 22. And then he has the Giants taking Ryan Ramczyk out of Wisconsin.
And that's, again, you could see it. You could make the case for it. You know, it's not as necessarily as solid of a win as it would have been, you know, when Zach Martin was there or when, you know, Scherff was there. But Ramczyk you could make an argument for it. There's logic behind that pick if they take him. I'm certainly not going to cry.
A couple other notes. Leonard Fournette, number four to Jacksonville. Tom Coughlin gets his power back. Not a shock.
But he had Watt going before the Giants even.
His combine numbers helped him a lot. We had a guy from Wisconsin earlier in the week. Oh, yeah, you were
I
with
know,
me yesterday.
I was with you.
Yeah, that's right. And, so big. Dalvin Cook, 8 to the Panthers. So that's the second running back.
And they could certainly use him.
And I'm looking for Njoku here, and I do not see him.
Out of the first round?
As a first-round pick. Nor, and this is really surprising, because he's going to be a good NFL. Oh, no, there he is. Christian McCaffrey at 19. McCaffrey off the board at 19.
Okay, Charlie, if you're watching the show.
I don't think he is.
Well, if you are, I'm telling you, I might have to run upstairs and get the pick in for the Giants if Njoku is still sitting there at 23. I might just have to do that.
Have you jumped on the Njoku bandwagon?
I've said now for a while, for a short time on this program, if Howard or Njoku are there at 23, I have to take them.
I thought you were too concerned about Njoku's blocking. See, now I think
I would rather have Howard.
Obviously, but see, for not, and again, I watched four games of
Njoku. I'll take Njoku.
He can block.
Oh, I'll take
it. They just haven't asked him to, but he is willing and he can do it.
Put it, get your VCRs out, record it off the web. I've said this before, but I'm going to make it very clear in English, as slow as I can say it. If Howard or Njoku are there at 23, I am taking the tight end, which is against mostly everything inside of my blood. But I am doing it. I believe that strongly in these players, what they can do and what they would be able to do for this team with the fit that this team needs right now. Also, because I am actually much more hopeful of Ereck Flowers holding down that left tackle spot than many other people are. And I don't think this left tackle class is nearly as good as we thought it once was.
You got so excited
about factors.
You got so excited about me coming to your side on stuff about a month ago. Now, I welcome you to the dark side.
I'm just saying.
Thank
a
you.
A lot of factors have brought me down this road, and that's where I am. So, yes, Charlie, I'm taking the Njoku at 23.
They have Zach Cunningham, a pick after the Giants to the Raiders. I think that's an interesting pick. Hassan Reddick, three picks after the Giants to the Seahawks. Boy, and he would be a terror in that defense, wouldn't he? Mm. That athlete running around? Oh, boy. And then he has a bunch of corners and a couple defensive ends the rest of the way. Jabril Peppers to the Steelers at 30. Maybe he could be a little like a little like freelance Palomalu type. Cowboys picking a corner. Packers picking a corner. Falcons picking a defensive end. And who do you have the Philly here? He had the Phillies. Eagles taking a cornerback, Tre'Davious White, which, man, again, would not be a surprise.
There are so many good corners in this draft.
And the Redskins, wow, he has Caleb Brantley going 17 in the first round. That's high for him. Anyway.
All right.
Thanks for joining us. Me and Feagles tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have somebody on to talk about the Miami Hurricanes. You can see Jeff Feagles get all giddy and talk about the U for 20 minutes. He'll be a happy camper.
Bring your sunblock.
Yeah, exactly. Ford Dottino and your umbrella. It's the Hurricanes, after all. Ford Dottino, I'm Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Have a wonderful afternoon.